Welcome to episode 222. Wow, that's a crazy number, my friend, of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest insight scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and as you can probably tell, I'm at my place in Florida this week. And joining me is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Let's get started with my first topic. And Mike Dano at Light Reading reported last week that T-Mobile could be testing 6G equipment. So I found this pretty interesting. The FCC granted a request by T-Mobile to test what T-Mobile calls an experimental prototype wireless equipment from Nokia. And this is near its headquarters in Bellevue, Washington. The spectrum band is in the 7 gigahertz to 8.4 gigahertz range. And what was interesting, Mike reports in his article that this is pretty purpose-built spectrum for 6G deployment, given it provides 10 to 20 times more capacity and higher data rates while reusing existing base stations. I don't know, man. It's pretty cool. And this is corroborated by Nokia testing in a similar spectrum range. So all the talk has been about AI-infused core infrastructure and RAN infrastructure. But this is pretty cool stuff. What do you think, buddy?
It seems pretty legit in the sense that, like you said, that there's FCC documents confirming that Nokia is testing in this spectrum.
Yeah.
As far as I understand, the spectrum isn't necessarily available yet. So I think both the 7 and 12 gigahertz spectrum that are being discussed for 6G are not quite cleared yet. So there might be some time that needs to happen to clear that spectrum.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's a good idea. And honestly, if it's standalone spectrum, if 6G will be standalone as we expect it will be, you probably want it in a new band. And you probably will eventually farm over other bands to that band, to 6G as found appropriate. But it seems like it's interesting, good timing, I think. We're about 5 years out, most likely. So there's a lot to figure out between now and then, especially since 7 gigahertz will not propagate very well. Outdoors, at least, and it will be probably very challenging to deal with the propagation characteristics, because I think we all know that there's no interest in densifying networks even further. That problem,
yeah, we've seen this with the lack of deployment of millimeter wave spectrum with 5G, right?
Yeah, and I think if I remember correctly, the reason why 12 gigahertz is or 6 gigahertz is chosen as the sub-6 versus non-sub-6 is because sub-6, the radio waves behave fairly similarly. Once you go above 6 gigahertz, then it behaves a lot more like a millimeter wave, which means that 7 gigahertz will not propagate particularly well unless there are some tricks that are applied. And I've heard that there are some things that have already been discussed in making 7 gigahertz propagate better. We already saw it, I think, with some 2.4 gigahertz spectrum, 2.5, even some 3.6, right? There are tricks that can be deployed to ensure better characteristics for things that shouldn't trick the laws of physics, but there's no real full breakage of them. Yeah, I've rambled along enough about the spectrum, but I think we're pretty early, and 6 gigahertz has been harmonized globally for Wi-Fi in a lot of cases. So I think 7 gigahertz feels like a better middle ground for everybody.
Yeah, I would agree. To me, this really demonstrates that T-Mobile is serious about maintaining its leadership with respect to performance and coverage and all of that. And what one of the secret kind of pieces to this puzzle, like we were just talking about densification, could be, again, the introduction of AI. There's been a lot of discussion around that could be part of the 6G standard. You and I have been talking about this and speculating about 6G for quite some time. There's been discussion around terahertz spectrum as well. So it's all very interesting, but given the fact that Nokia has been testing similar equipment, it doesn't surprise me that, and obviously Nokia's got a lot of strength and history and with respect to RAN development. But it's an interesting development. And as always, our buddy Mike is always fast on the uptake when it comes to stuff like that. But let's go to your first topic. And you want to talk about Google. They launched the Pixel 9a. And you want to provide your insights about that mid-range?
Yeah, Google's usual cadence when it comes to Pixel phones is they launch the primary spectrum of their device, so the Pixel 9 series, and then they'll launch the 9A about 6 months later. And that's usually a cut down version of the flagship tier, but at a much more affordable price. The 9A is $499. So you can buy that phone outright and not think about or worry about the cost. And it's actually cheaper than the iPhone 16e. And it does still ship with the same processor as the flagship series, which is, you get a lot of the performance of the flagship series, but in a lower price tier. Obviously, it's also a lower quality camera. They went with an older modem. And I think that if you look at what this offers, it's got the Tensor G4, comes with 8 gigs of RAM instead of 12. You still get an OLED display, which is really nice. You do get a dual camera, but what's really interesting with the Pixel 9a is it has a bigger battery than the flagship series does. So it actually delivers better battery life than the standard Pixel series, which is somewhere how the 16e is, where the budget version of the phone or the budget version of the flagship actually offers better battery life. And I think that's also an understanding of this type of user cares more about battery life than most other things. And as a result of that, you get really good battery life. I have not used one yet. Mine is on the way, so I will talk to it down the road. Since I'm not pressed, I get my devices sometimes later than everybody else, which is perfectly fine. But this will work on all major networks. You can still use it on Google Fi. But yeah, it's a good phone. It pretty much performs very similarly to the other Pixel series. Mm. It does have a downgraded modem. It will not support some of the satellite features of the flagship series, like satellite messaging. Yeah. And I understand that the older modem is also probably not going to have as good coverage. So it's very similar to the iPhone 16e in the sense that it's a cut down modem with a bigger battery in it, which compensates maybe for the less good modem. But otherwise, it's a good phone. And generally, the Pixel A series has been what I recommend to people if they're switching to Android and don't want to spend a lot of money, or if they're a longtime Android user but don't want to spend a lot, but still want to get a lot out of the phone. And it's been the default recommendation. I've used almost every A series. I have an 8A over there. So the 9A will be good. All the reviews have been really positive. Mm-hmm. Obviously, expectations are lowered at $499, but generally the US struggles with devices that are in the mid-range between the high-end and the free phones. So there aren't that many choices that are quite good. It's basically Samsung and Pixel. There are some OnePlus devices as well, but you can count them on your hand. And other regions like India and China have a lot more choices there. Oh, yeah. I will also add, I don't know where it is, it's not here, but Poco did launch a $499 flagship ish phone with a Snapdragon 8 Elite processor in it, which is probably the fastest and most capable phone in terms of price and capability. That is a offshoot of Xiaomi, and they are probably also one of the few that will offer something in that category. So there are not that many devices in that tier, but the Pixel 9a is definitely one of the better ones.
Yeah, it's interesting, providing better battery capacity and battery life, right? That's typically something that you might find in more of a premium phone. So is it also based on the fact that you've got fewer radios in the 9A?
I'm not really sure. I would say the battery is mostly, I think, a function of them trying to focus on delivering the experience that their customers want to have. Yeah. They're obviously saving money on other things, but there are some Chinese flagship phones out there that have 6,000 milliamp hour batteries. So that there is a top tier for battery. We're not really seeing it in the US. The only phone that really has it right now is the OnePlus 13, which I also reviewed. That also had insane battery life, but I would expect this to have incredibly good battery life as well. And they're probably clocking down to Tensor G4 a little bit based on the benchmarks that I've seen.
Yeah, I would expect that it's detuned a little bit to get that better battery life. But you're the device expert. I'm the infrastructure guy, so I'm going to stick to my stuff. But hey, my second topic, I want to talk about Vodafone. And I thought this was pretty compelling. They recently connected their 200 millionth IoT device. And I think this is pretty phenomenal. IoT has been slow to monetize. I think we've talked about it on numerous occasions. Bill Curtis, our analyst in residence at More Insights and Strategy, covers IoT, so I don't want to go too far out of my swim lane here. But I think it's really interesting. And so this was an article that I found on RCR Wireless last week. And within the article, they talk about Vodafone hitting that Also, just in general, that the carrier has experienced an accelerated sales rate of 50% year over year over the last 5 years, which it's doubled its volume. And so the reality is IoT is monetizable. It just, I think expectations were set really high and what was going to happen with narrowband and what would the connectivity modality be there. We've talked about LoRaWAN, but certainly, and then I recently met a company, FlowLive, and they build networking infrastructure for IoT. They do a lot of the orchestration around IoT. And in speaking with them, they believe a 5G network is the best network to support not only narrowband and industrial IoT, but obviously everything else that gets hung on a mobile network. So I thought this was pretty incredible. The cool thing is I finally have made a connection with Vodafone. And so I'll be getting a briefing here in the next couple of weeks to spend more time with them to not only dive into what they're doing with IoT, but also to discuss some of the other things that they're doing. They're a big adopter of Open RAN, and obviously they're a huge force to be reckoned with in other parts of the world as well. But I don't know if you caught the news. Any thoughts before we move to your second topic?
I did. When we were filling out our topics, I saw this. I was going to put it down and I saw you'd already done so. So I think it's cool. I think it also shows that Vodafone, I think people really underestimate the size of Vodafone as a global entity. So yeah. I think this kind of is a reminder that they're very large and they used to own 50% of Verizon.
Yeah.
That they're quite large and they have a lot of influence and they're always on the edge of enabling the latest technologies.
Yeah. Awesome. Great insights, my friend. All right, your second topic. We're going to talk about RedCap. And this seems to be one of your favorite topics, but the GSA is forming a 5G RedCap special group. And you want to talk a little bit about that today.
Yes. So the GSA, which is the Global Mobile Suppliers Association, there's a lot of GSAs out there. Their goal is to create this special group to facilitate and collaborate on RedCap networks, features, and product rollouts. The founding members are Ericsson, Huawei, Qualcomm, and MediaTek. So two infrastructure providers and two endpoint providers, which, you know, is good. I just accidentally triggered some kind of AI on my camera that shot me out here. So now you get to see my whole office, including some of my monitor. That's the hand gestures. I don't know what I was doing. It's my fault. But yeah, the key here is that 5G RedCap requires standalone networks. And the truth is that there's a lot of opportunity in IoT and in non-smartphone applications for RedCap. I have obviously talked plenty about RedCap and blabbed endlessly about it. I have a review of that device coming fairly soon, calling it Wildit 5G, which is fun. And yeah, I just think that this is really good for the industry because one, it pushes more towards standalone, which is important, which is what we need for 5G. There needs to be more standalone for real 5G applications to occur, but also we need more collaboration between all the players because these modems need to be integrated pretty well. They're very low power, but they can offer a lot of new and unique services that we've been thinking about and planning for years that just weren't possible because 5G is just way too power hungry for a lot of applications. And RedCap, in my experience, as I tested it, it was using well under a watt in most use cases. And only when you are uploading a significant amount of data did you ever go over 1 watt. I think there's a lot of opportunities here to fine tune and understand applications for RedCap and potentially replace a lot of 3G and 4G infrastructure, but also expand to new use cases. I tried connecting it to my TV, to a Kindle and a bunch of other devices. Some were successful, some were not. But I think there's a lot of opportunities where maybe MediaTek and Qualcomm work with device OEMs to properly build their devices to be pre-built to enable RedCap and utilize 5G standalone. I think it's really interesting and it's exciting, but standalone 5G is the key here and we need to push more operators to move in that direction.
Yeah, and this use and the application of 5G RedCap will do that. What I'm very excited about is the use case around wearables, right? And integrating very low cost sensors into clothing. And that's something that's been discussed for quite some time, but it was chicken and egg, right? Because not only the bill of materials, but the power requirement to do that. And so like, I think potentially we're going to see a lot of innovation with respect to the integration of sensors into shoes, into clothing, health tech, kind of applications. What are some of the other use cases do you think are going to rise to the top?
I think there's going to be a lot of industrial applications. If you can, because right now, if you think about the cost of a 5G module or even a 4G module, it's still very high. T-Mobile with TCL, the device that they were selling was like $60. I think they retailed it for $90, but they were selling for $60. And honestly, they were just giving it away. They were also lowering the price of the plan to $5 a month. So while you're not getting very fast speeds, you are getting connectivity for $5 a month. And that's basically like a smartwatch plan, essentially.
Right.
And I think that I could see, to your point, health wearables having more 5G modems in them, because first of all, it's way more secure, but also they don't always need to be connected all the time. They only need to connect when, as they're connecting. So AI will help to decide when communication needs to occur with the network. And I think there are some significant power savings and BOM cost savings, because this thing, it connected via a USB-C port for power. So it didn't even have a battery. So you could create some of these modules where it's so low power that you just power it over USB-C and you can attach it to certain things like AR glasses down the road. But I also think that the subsequent generations, maybe built on more advanced process node tech, could create some integrated 5G modems for AR glasses or other wearable devices that we aren't using today, but also integrating them into equipment that otherwise wouldn't have had it due to power constraints or cost constraints, that I think could actually expand pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, I agree. Great insights, buddy. Hey, I'm going to hit my third and final topic, and this is pretty late-breaking news. So AT&T and AST Space Mobile are set for FirstNet trials. So this news just broke this week, and basically it's Band 14. And so the FCC is allowing AT&T and AST permission to test direct-to-cell satellite connectivity over that. And as I'm reading through the article, it's part of a broader initiative to extend FirstNet's mission critical capabilities beyond the reach of traditional terrestrial infrastructure. But it's important to note that AT&T has deployed satellite colts and that sort of thing in times of natural disaster. I've visited a few facilities, one in New Orleans. I've probably mentioned this like a number of times on our podcast, but it's just another validation as AST Space Mobile moves forward. What do you think?
Yeah, I saw this news as well. I thought it was pretty big. I think one, it's big for FirstNet because it gives them a satellite provider that's pretty well known. Oh, there we go. Back to tight shot. I figure out how to use it now. But yeah, I think it also helps AST continue to show their relevance in the market. And this is one of the best applications for direct to cell. I think this is use case number one. Is emergency services. I think it's exciting. And T-Mobile's already offering this with T-Priority.
I was going to mention it.
Total sense. Yeah. It makes total sense to me. I think every single provider should be offering satellite as a component of their emergency services offerings. It makes total sense. You know, AT&T is a big provider when it comes to FirstNet. This, honestly, I'm surprised it took this long. I would have expected this to have come sooner, but it's good to know it's happening nonetheless. And this was also something that I caught, so I'm glad that you had it as topic.
Yeah, late breaking, because we didn't get to record a podcast last week. You and I have been on the road for weeks and weeks, but we're getting back into the swing. But with that, let's hit your last topic, and you want to talk about MediaTek, and they've announced a new Dimensity solution and another that I can't even pronounce. So I'm going to let you
Okay, I got this. So that's the Companio Ultra.
Okay.
Basically, this happened last week as well. These are two products that are launching in the next few weeks. The Dimensity 9400 Plus is a minor speed bump to the Dimensity 9400, which is already in market. And it's really designed to enable like high-end flagship devices. And you'll see the 9400 almost exclusively in phones. The main use case for this is flagship phones, mostly in China. So it's a lot of the same OEMs like Oppo, Vivo, and other Chinese. And then the truth is, it's really an AI performance boost in a lot of ways. It does have the same NPU and the same CPU cores as the 9400, but there's a little bit of optimizations for certain capabilities like running DeepSeek's R1 model. So that's what they're really focused on, and enhancing FP8 calculations There's also some improved Baidu satellite support, so like faster time to fix, 33% faster, in fact. Very clearly, small tweaks, but designed to make it a slightly enhanced version. And then they also did some graphics software optimizations as well. So it's like a lot of tweaking here and there. And then the Companio Ultra is a chip specifically for Chromebooks. And I think this will actually get a lot of traction at the high end of Chromebooks because it has very similar configuration to the 9400 in terms of CPU, GPU, and NVU. It's for PC use, so Chromebooks running Chrome OS. Yeah. But really, it's for Chrome OS Plus, which is specifically the Gemini-capable version of Chromebook. So it's a lot more enhanced with more AI capabilities with all of the G Suite and anything that runs Android. And it's on the 3-nanometer process node, so it's going to get good battery life. They made a lot of comparisons to Intel's Core Ultra 125U, which I think is one of the bigger chips in that higher end of the Chromebook market. They're claiming that it's 30% better battery life and also better performance than Intel's CPU. So they're saying 18% faster CPU performance and 40% better GPU performance and 50% less power consumption. So they're really like pushing this hard. And I think we'll probably see a lot of this maybe at Google I/O with OEMs picking this up. And it's a really interesting platform. So MediaTek has continued to work really closely with Google to enable Gemini on both platforms. And yeah, I just think that there's a lot going on at MediaTek because they're also partnered with NVIDIA and there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. And they also have modems, but this was mostly focused on applications processors. Not really many 5G applications for the Companio, but I'm interested to see if we ever see a 5G Chromebook.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you mentioned support on that Chromebook chipset for G Suite, the basic AI stuff, but they're not positioning that solution as an AI PC like platform.
Oh, yes, they are.
They are.
Oh, yes, they are. Oh, that's wow. Google's answer to the AI PC.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
That's Chromebook Plus.
So have you kicked the tires on it yet? Can you do an apples to apples comparison on like something from Qualcomm as an example?
I haven't yet, but I fully intend on doing so. In fact, I just got my hands on the Samsung Galaxy Tab S10 Ultra, which is a 9300 plus chip.
Yeah.
But that launched last year. There's not that many Dimensity chips in the US, but I have a feeling that there will be a lot of Companios, and they will mostly be in Chromebook. I think we're probably a few months away from being able to test the Companios, and that will be a really interesting comparison, especially against Intel, but also Qualcomm. And all benchmarks.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I see a Forbes review article in your future.
Maybe, if I have time. I'm buried right now.
Not to give you another. Yeah. So anyway. Oh, and I'll just do like a gratuitous plug before we close. I did spend time with NTT last week at their upgrade event. I just posted a research note to the More Insights and Strategy website. So I would encourage our viewers and listeners, if you want to learn more about what I learned with NTT, but they're going to surprise you. I'll just give you a quick headline. Number 3 in the world in data center service delivery. I'm blown away. I didn't know that factoid. So anyway, hit the website, check that out.
Yes.
Actually, a lot of content out there as well. So
I was going to say that MediaTek announcement, actually, I heard already written up and is published on Forbes. So you can read that from last week if you want more details on those announcements. Yeah. And then I'll also add that tomorrow, Will and I will most likely be busy watching our teams play each other in Houston.
That's right.
I think it's a 5:10 game for me, which I think means it's a 7:10 for you. Yeah. And neither of us are wearing our hats right now, but mostly for lighting purposes, but I also don't really wear my hat at my desk. But yeah, it'll be fun to see the San Diego Padres play against the Houston Astros.
Yeah. Okay. Astros and Padres. Thanks for letting me know about that. I've been so heads down here in the Florida Keys this week, focused on work and finishing up a kitchen remodel, that I wasn't unaware of that. But I will be in Key West tomorrow. I'm escaping the traffic here. They're going through a water main replacement, and the area that I live in, Tavernier, is the last, and it's brutal. The traffic's normally brutal down here during peak season, but it's even more. So I've been like huddled in my condo here and been staying very productive. But hey, buddy, I'm glad we could get this podcast recorded this week. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone out there would like to provide insights on a specific 5G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will is at WillTownTech and I'm at AnshelSog. We hope you guys have a great rest of your week and maybe even weekend. And don't forget to rate and subscribe.